The story that follows is one of the original group from A Touch of Infinity. It was written while I was in the army, and on rereading it, seems a pleasant enough little Philip. I doubt seriously whether the story, even when fresh, could have changed the course of Western civilization, and now that it's almost 10 years old, I'm positive it was merely good, clean fun. Yes, I know that practically, the gimmick in this story could never work, that people would never allow it to work. But when you're a paid liar, nay, writer, you presuppose people will go along with you. That, Virginia, is called the suspension of disbelief. And without it, Heinlein, Asimov, Vonnegut, and myself would be the most imaginative quartet of bricklayers in the world. The story is called Back to the Drawing Boards. Perhaps it was inevitable, and perhaps it was only a natural result of the twisted eugenics that produced Leon Packett. In either case, the invention of the perambulating vid robot came about, and nothing has been at all the same since. The inevitability factor was a result of live trivid and the insatiable appetite for novelty of the vid audience. If vid broadcasts came from Bermuda in trivid color with Feely and Whiff, then they wanted wideband transmission from the heart of the Sudetenland. If they got that, it wasn't enough. Next, they wanted programs from the top of Everest. And when they had accomplished that, God only knows how, the voracious idiot mind of the audiences demanded more. They demanded live casts from the millstone circling above the earth. Then it was lunar fantasies with authentic settings, and Mars, and Venus, and the outer cold ones. Finally, Leon Packett stumbled upon the secret of a perfect, self-contained tri-vid camera operating off a minute four-speed generator, and in his warped way, he struck instantly to the truth of the problem, that the only camera that could penetrate to those inner niches of the universe that the eyes of man demanded to glimpse was a man himself. How completely simple it was. The only gatherer of facts, as seen by the eyes of a man, were the eyes of a man. But since no man would volunteer to have his head sliced open, his brains scooped out, and a tri-vid camera inserted, Leon Packett invented walk-away. In all due to the devil, it was coldly logical, and it was a beautiful bit of workmanship. Walk-away had the form of a human being, even to ball and socket joints at the knees and elbows. He stood just under 7 feet tall, and his hide was a burnished, permanentized alumisteel suit. His hands could be screwed off, and in their stead could be inserted any one of 36 duty hands, withdrawn from storage crypts located in the limbs. His head was the only part of him that was slightly more than human, brilliantly so, again offering Satan his plaudits. Where the center of the face on a human would have been, the revolving lens wheel with its 5 turrets bulked strangely. Beneath the lens wheel, a full-range audio grid lay with crisscrossed strangeness. The audio pickups were located on either side as well as front and rear of the head. 2 sets of controls were used on a walk-away. 1 set was embedded in the right arm and would snap up at the proper coded pressing of a lock snit at the wrist, and was chiefly used by walk-away himself when he was asked to play back what he had heard or seen. The other console controls were in the back and, to my knowledge, were never employed after walk-away's initial test runs. He disliked being pawed. Naturally, there were dissenters when walk-away was born. Dissent ennobles the hysteria. The machine can kill, a few said. They were the most rational of the opponents to giving a thing, their word, with that powerful a metal body, volition and conscience. But in one of the rare instances of ratiocination and decency subduing the paranoid bestiality humans like to call common sense, the Neo-Luddites were shouted down. The creature, well, wasn't he? had to have the right of free choice if he was going to get the story in all its fullness and with a modicum of imagination, which the vid audience demanded. So Walkaway was made more human. He was able to disagree, to be surprised, to follow instructions almost as they were given, and to select the viewing subjects he wished when he was filming. Walkaway was a most remarkable, what? Creature. Leon, you've got to do it. Don't be obstinate, that's just being foolish. They'll get him somehow, Leon. Leon Packett spun in the chair, facing the window. His back was very straight, and his neck held a rigid aloofness. Get out, McCollum. Get out and tell your pony soldiers to do the same. Leave me alone. Alan McCollum threw up his hands in eloquent frustration. Lee, I'm trying to get through to you, for God's sake. All I ask is you listen to them and then make a decision. Packett spun in the chair. His feet hit the floor with a resounding clump, and he leaned one elbowed arm at McCollum. His index finger was an unwavering spear, the tip of which aimed between McCollum's sensitive dark brown eyes. Now look, McCollum, I spent 15 years in a cellar lab, working what I could and experimenting as best I could, soldering old pieces together because I couldn't get a Frerix grant. Then I happened to think of putting two old gadgets together, and I came up with a miracle. Now I'm big time, and the Frerix Foundation uses me in their institutional advertisements. His lean, horsey face was becoming ruby-blotched. But Walkaway is mine, McCollum, mine. I dreamed him up, and I sweated constructing him. I starved for 15 years, McCollum, 15. You know how long that is? While you and all your MIT buddies were piddling around putting chrome on old discoveries, I was missing all the good things. McCollum's jaws worked. His eyes dulled with suppressed fury. That isn't fair, Lee. You almost enjoy your misery, and you know it. Packett stood up. His face was a crimson and milk patchwork. Get out, he snarled. His thin lips worked loosely, and his nostrils flared. Get out and leave me alone. Walkaway is not going to Carina. Not Epsilon Carini, not Mia Placidus, nowhere in Carina. Walkaway is staying here, where I can keep getting my commissions, where I can guarantee my future. It's been too dirty for me to start being patriotic now, McCollum. So you can trot out there and tell your space patrol buddies I'm not in the market. McCollum was about to shout an answer, but he stood up instead. Stood up and stared at the contorted features of Leon Packett. He turned and took 3 steps to the slide door. With his palm, but not fingertips, fitted into the depression, he paused and looked back at Packett. There are doctors who can help you, Leon. Get out, you son of a bitch! A heavy Plastex ashtray crashed into the wall beside McCollum's head. His fingertips touched, and the door slid. Perhaps he knew it was inevitable. The machinery he had always despised now ground its wishes out in the dust of his ambitions. He had suffered by his own hand, and had cursed the powers that had overlooked him, but now they wanted his vid robot. His Walkaway. He knew they would reimburse him handsomely, but that was not what he sought. Packett knew, and he moved to preserve his will, despite the loss of his invention. Late into the night he worked on the smallest, most unnoticeable alterations in the printed circuitry of Walkaway's mind and conscience. Late into the night on a space of plastics no larger than the surface of an eyeball. And when he fell into an exhausted sleep as the daylight ribboned across the laboratory walls, Walkaway stood as he had stood, unchanged, apparently, but changed inwardly. He managed to salvage his old age. by the simple expedient of refusing to allow ownership to switch from his hands, and after his death the hands of the Frerichs Foundation, into the hands of the military, he preserved a hold on Walkaway. The guard, his terminology space patrol, had long since been aborted, despite the tabloids' efforts to keep it alive, were forced to hire Walkaway. They signed him on as a civilian employee, paid a monthly wage, a per diem remuneration, as well as travel expenses. The wages were to be paid on demand, and books were kept by the Frerichs Foundation, whose interest in Packett and Walkaway were more than merely scientific. With the world-famous Leon Packett associated with them, there could be no doubt about doles and grants. The Frerichs Foundation had men at its helm whose interests penetrated into other fields than scientific: politics, finance, authority. The men were exceedingly careful to keep books. The guard's first enterprise, in which Walkaway figured prominently, was the remote from Bounce Point. Bounce Point was the supersatellite constructed out beyond Pluto. It had been thrown up as the last outpost of solar enterprise, man's final touch with what was known before he leaped off into the unknown. From Bounce Point, great and silver and ebony in Pluto's sky, Walkaway was destined to begin the long ride out. McCollum and his contemporaries had not been idle. While Leon Packett nursed his hatred of authority in the machine of empire, they had been hard at work. The warp drive was ready. Nuzzling the gleaming inner hull of its drive chamber, the warp drive was larger than later models would surely have to be. It was a giant nest of power units, small inside larger, larger inside still larger, and finally, resting in a brace socket at the tip of the final unit, a force bead of incalculable power. That was the random factor. How hard could the warp drive be pushed by this force bead? What were the effects on a man sent through not space? For the test, what better guinea pig than a metal man with a camera face? In Trivid with audio pickup, what better record could be offered for study? The initial flight of W-1 to Carina, lost in the star heaps of space, would be accomplished with no human hand at the controls. The robot would take the bounce. Leon Packett lay on a dirty bunk in a haven back of the central port space pads. The room was a flop, with the tackboard walls only stretching halfway to the ceiling. The other half of the wall was strand wire put in to offer a slight deterrent to thieves in the other cubicles, in no way to offer privacy. Packett lay on the bunk, a half-emptied bottle of Paisley's Rigid between his side and his arm, held upright by his armpit. His long, almost oriental eyes were closed in stupor, and his horsey face was a Madame Tussauds wax reproduction. His breathing was irregular when McCollum found him. Packett! All civility was gone. There are worse things than insults. The insults had not alienated McCollum. The others had. Packett, they want you. Get out, Packett. He dragged the bottle with its sour smell from Leon Packett's armpit and threw it to the floor. Where the wrench of the bottle had not disturbed the drunken man, where McCollum's shot-like shouts had not roused him, the soft, gurgling emptying of the bottle succeeded. Packett came straight up on the bunk, hands in his wild hair, and he screamed. With eyes closed, with deep-lined areas about the sockets, he shrieked, "Let me alone!" Then he opened his eyes. After he had sobbed and dry-heaved, McCollum got him to his feet and out of the filthy, wino-odored cubicle. There was a small argument about 3 days' rent with a ferret-like man behind the cage, but McCollum flashed over a five-note, and they went into the street, where the sounds of the traffic overhead on the expressways deafened Packett, rising over him like the spread, leathery wings of a pterodactyl, and dropped over him with suffocating strength. He tried to bolt back into the building. McCollum was forced to hit him. The hack ride was uneventful. The Frerichs Foundation rose alabaster on the third tier of the new portion. McCollum would have paused to clean Leon Packett's face and innards had not the guard representatives spotted them as they left the hack at tier level. The gay uniforms of the guard were ranked in the hall as McCollum steadied his sodden cargo into the building. "My God, purulent," one guardsman snorted sourly. "Is that Packett?" a dapper, balding guardsman asked. His shoulders bore commander boards. McCollum nodded. He tried to move past with Packett. The commander stopped them. McCollum explained, "He was on the strip. He's not been well." "Don't cover for him, McCollum. He's a waste, and there should be no glossing. The man is a waste. Can he talk?" McCollum shrugged, still supporting Packett, whose legs were taffy. "I suppose. I don't know how much coherence you'll get out of him, but I suppose he can talk." The commander nudged a thumb toward a conference room. "Bring him along." They started toward the room, and Packett began to blather. Even as they thrust him into a chair, his words fumbled and roiled. "They with power, laws and can't do, and do, and have this with what they let you do. I know, I've always known. The wheels with grinding down, and they are afraid, so they rule you. Rule." He went on ramblingly, almost semi-conscious, his words, more his accents, tirades against authority and government. They had hampered him, but he would get even. The guard listened closely, for after all, this was Packett, the inventor of walkaway. They listened, and finally the commander put his gloved hand, his crimson gloved hand, across Packett's mouth. "That will be enough, man," he deep-throated, with suppressed fury. "Tell him what we want, McCollum," the esoteric purulent caller urged the Frerix man. McCollum's eyebrows went up and his lips thinned with resignation. The military never could pull its weight in these matters. "Leon," McCollum said, slipping to one knee beside Packett's chair. "Leon, they want to take Walkaway back to the drawing boards. They think he has too much initiative. Leon, can you understand?"
"No. No. By God damn their eyes, no. Not a touch, not a wire, nothing. He stays as he is. If they want to use him, damn them, they've robbed me of my fortune. Now they'd pick my brainwork apart. No, I say."
They argued and pleaded and cajoled and screeched at him for the better part of 5 hours. But he was firm. He still owned Walkaway. The Frerix Foundation employed Packett by Grant, but Walkaway was still his own, and when it came down to it, not a military personnel at all. Walkaway was a free entity, a bond slave of metal set free. If they wanted him to go to Carina, as Packett had resolved it to himself, he would go as he was now, today, now. So the guard had to accept it that way. They had to take Walkaway with his individuality, too much for a robot, and they had to send him on the first bounce to the stars as a metal man with thoughts of his own. That was as it should have been, for had not Leon Packett created Walkaway? Had not Packett rearranged the circuits to provide a hidden factor the guard knew nothing about? Had it not all been planned that way? To results we know now. The ship was crazily shaped. It was a sundial, with a thick trunk and two clear faceplates at either end. Great faceplates of clear substance through which Walkaway could train his turret eyes and see the universe as it whirled by in not space. The drive apertures were set at angles around the thick trunk of the ship, and there were no sleeping compartments, no galley, no chairs, nothing a metal servant would find useless. The ship W-1 blasted free of Bounce Point on March 24th, 2111, its sole occupant, a robot named Walkaway, whose face was a triple-turret trivid camera, and whose mind was the mind of a metal man with initiative. A certain initiative that only one man knew existed. The ship left on March 24th. On March 31st, Leon Packett gripped a pair of heavy scissors and thrust them deep into his neck. His will was a masterpiece of maudlin self-pity, but it released Walkaway from all human obligations, setting him in toto free. He was a singular now, not an invention, but a civilian employee of the military guard. He was to receive payment per diem for his work, and his accounts were to be handled by the Frerichs Foundation. Whatever Walkaway earned remained his own. The ship went out on March 24th, 2111. It returned 365 years later. And the future began. Oh, Lord. The records were covered with dust. But valid, that was the rub. The Frerichs Foundation had sunk in its own mismanagement, and a pleasure sanctuary had risen on its whited bones. The new portion was now called the underside, for tiers had risen high on high to the 50th level above that tier. Now there was a planet-wide government, and the ship W-1 had become a legend. The robot Walkaway had become a myth. The ship had never been heard from again, and, as will happen with all cultures, time had passed the concept of star travel by. There was a broken-nosed statue of Leon Packett on the third tier, many miles from where the Frerichs Foundation had stood, a statue that called him one of the great inventors of all time and all mankind. There were no scissors in the statue. When the ship came down past the moon and its warning gear telemetered out the recog signals, the Earth Central Control Tower was lost in disbelief. A slow-eyed brunette who was in charge of deciphering and matching recog signals with the call letters of those ships out called for a checker. Her section chief, a woman who had been on the job for 18 years, matched the recog signals and turned to the younger girl with a word lost on her lips. The call went into Guard Central immediately. They denied landing coordinates to the W-1 and held it a space till they had found the records in the subcellar of the pleasure sanctuary on the third level. When they had the files, they knew the story completely, and they sent word to berth in the W-1. Walkaway looked the same. Huge and graceful, his face vaguely human, his body a sort of Homo sapiens plus, he slid down a Nilex rope from the cargo aperture of the sundial-shaped ship. He had not bothered to lower the landing ramp. As he came down the single strand, his metallic reflection shone in the smooth landing jack's surface. The reflection of Walkaway shone down and down and over again down as he slid quickly to the pad. They watched, as they might watch a legend materialize. This was the fabled robot that had gone out to seek the stars in Carina and had returned. 365 years the W-1 had been away, and now it had returned. What would the vid camera of this perambulating robot show? What wonders awaited man now that his interest was roused in the immensities of space? The guard watched, ranked around the pad, as Walkaway slid down the Nilex rope. The great sundial-shaped ship held high above them, unlike any other of the sleek vessels in the yard, tripod poised on its high-reaching legs. Then the robot touched earth, and a shout went up. Home is the hunter, home from the hill. 365 years. No one was left who remembered this creature of flawless metal. No one who had seen Walkaway go out on the shuttle to Bounce Point. Bounce Point itself, 200 years dust, gone in the struggle for the outer cold one. The robot came across the landing pad, his shining feet bright against the blackened pad rock, his close-up turret camera humming quietly, taking in the reception ceremony for posterity. Before the guard representative could issue forth with the practiced phrases of 100 other receptions, the robot said clearly, "It is good to be back. Where is Leon Packett?" How strange it was, they said later. A legend stood asking them about another legend. Paul Bunyan inquiring after Zeus. What could they say? Few of them even knew of the man named Leon Packett. Those who knew were vague where he was concerned. After all, 365 years, the earth had changed. I asked, where is Leon Packett? Which of you is from the Frerichs Foundation? There were no answers. And then someone in the front ranks of the guard, someone who knew his history, said, you have been gone 300 years and more, robot. Leon Packett is dead, finished the guardsman. Long dead. Where have you been so long? And a circuit closed as data was fed to Walkaway. And the future was assured. Loneliness. Leon Packett had done his work well. Had they not tried to save a buck, actually 11 million bucks, the wonderful glitch would not have escaped their notice. Taking Walkaway back to the drawing boards would have shown them what Leon Packett had actually accomplished. He had freed the robot's soul completely, not only legally, but in actuality. Walkaway felt great sadness. There had only been one other who knew his inner feelings. That had been Leon Packett. There had been empathy between them. The man, a bit mad. The robot, a bit man. They had spent evenings together as two childhood friends might have. The man and the faceless metal creature, product of the man's mind. They had not talked much, but a word had brought understanding of concepts, of emotions. All of them. The robot, immobile, answering metallically. Power. Someday, someday. Checks. Balances. Oh, walk away. Someday, just someday. I know. The nights had passed restlessly for Packett, while the sickness within him festered. The robot had been constructed in the image of man. Seeing everything through its vid eyes, hearing everything through its pickups, but saying little, working hard. Then Packett had known he would die and Walkaway would live on, an extension of himself, the sword he would someday wield. He had worked long into the night, foreseeing where others would not foresee, could not foresee, though they had the knowledge. For Leon Packett had been gifted, sick, but gifted. And he had left his curse, left his justice, left his vengeance to live on after he was gone. Walkaway learned of Leon Packett's death and the circuit Packett had tampered with, that he had wanted to close at the knowledge of his death, snapped to with the mental thud that only Walkaway felt, that the universe was soon to know. The robot turned to the guardsman and made the one request no one would have considered, the one request that was his, legally, to make. Pay me my wages. 365 years on Earth. 9 months and 15 days in space. The warp drive had been better than ghosts had thought. Memories of McCollum and his fellows from MIT lived within the force bead and had given it power. Better, far better, it had been than their wildest imaginings. But Einstein had been correct. Mass, infinity, time, zero. He had been correct, and Walkaway had earned 365 years worth of wages, per diem, plus travel pay according to military regulations. They could not withhold it on grounds that he was using military transportation. Leon Packett had seen to that. Walkaway was a private citizen. Plus, interest accrued. The sum was staggering. The sum was unbelievable. The sum could, would, must bankrupt the Earth government. It was unheard of. The prelate convened, and the arguments raged, but Walkaway needed no defense. He merely requested, pay me my wages. And they had to do it. Oh, they tried to dodge their way out of it. They tried to ensnare him in legalities, but he was a man of alumisteel, and legalities could not affect him. The circuit had closed and his life's plan was set. In the mind of Walkaway burned the conscience and soul of his creator. Leon Packett was not dead. In his creation was reborn the intense, vibrant hatred of power and government and authority. In Walkaway was the perfect weapon, indestructible, uncaring, human as human it need be, inhuman as inhuman it must be, to bring about the downfall of that which Packett had despised. 15 years in a cellar laboratory had carried forth for over 300 years, and the future was molded on printed circuits. Finally, they exceeded. They paid him his wages. The government of Earth was bankrupted. The world belonged to a man of Alumisteel. It was no longer Earth. Had he wished, he might have named it Walkaway's World. For such it was. Leon Packett had foreseen much. He had applied Einstein's equations, and he had known what would happen. The scientists of the Frerichs Foundation had known also, and they had considered it all, but the job had had to be done in that era before man had turned inward once more. They had feared what might happen, but not considered it an inevitability. They had looked on it the way the farmer looks on earthquake. Yes, it might happen, but that would be an act of God, not a thing that must be. But they had not considered Leon Packett. He had taken steps. He had altered his creation and made it want its pay when it knew he was dead. For dead he was dead, and alive he was dead. But in the soul of Walkaway, he lived again. So he had created an act of God. Twisted in thought, crying in the darkness of his tormented mind, Leon Packett had changed the future, changed it so irrevocably, even the score so beautifully, man would remember and curse and live with his name forever. They had known of the possibility, and they had tried to prevent it. Let us take Walkaway back to the drawing boards, McCollum, that shadow lost in the past, had cried. But Leon Packett had overruled him. No! He would not let his name and his future be stolen from him. There was no need for him to go on living out a worthless life. That was bitterness. He had a tool that would and could and needed to drive forward to his ordained destiny. He had Walkaway, and though they suspected what might be, what could be, they never thought it needed to be. They figured without the drive and thirst of Walkaway's master. They figured without the hatred of a man for himself and for all other men. Walkaway wanted his wages. He got them by getting the earth. There was not that much money in the world, nor was there that much property, but there was the government, and soon Walkaway was the government. That was the future Leon Packett built for himself as the shrine of his memory. Walkaway was not vindictive, but Leon Packett was. There haven't been many changes, not many, not for us. It has been the same for a very long time. Walkaway was fair and carried forth Packett's desires in the only way an Alumisteel man could. Changes? No, not many. But you'll forgive me, of course. I must hurry now. I'm quite overdue. I should have been at my lubrication hours ago.